Hello there, and welcome along to this week's Racing Postcast. It's Monday, the 1st of November. I'm Maddie Plell, and this week I'm joined once again by Chris Cook and James Stevens, who are both Cheltenham-based today, which is fitting given we're going to be looking back on a brilliant weekend over the jumps. We're going to talk to you about Shamblou's dramatic tipping up in the Charlie Hall, handing victory to Fusil Raffles at Wetherby, and also Frodon and Bryony Frost bringing it home for England in the champion chase at Down Royal. There was also top-class action at Ascot, including Larry's win in the London Gold Cup. And it's a really busy week we've got coming up. We've got the Melbourne Cup tomorrow. The Breeders' Cup kicks off on Friday. And then sticking with the jumps theme, the Badger Beers at Wincanton this weekend. So stay tuned to find out who our experts fancy. And bear in mind, last week, Chris put in a 12-1 winner when Enthused won at Catterick. Big clap for Chris there.
Maddie, I'm hoping that means I don't have to pick a winner for another 3 months. Is that right?
Doesn't quite work like that, Chris. But nevertheless, let's jump into the review and let's go to Wetherby. We'll talk about the Bet365 hurdle, the Grade 2, which was won by Indefatigable for Daryl Jacob and Paul Webber. Ridden out wide was this mare, and she was making the most of her allowance. She came home clear of Prashima and Paisley Park, who there was a lot of noise about him after this run. Perhaps cheek pieces are going to be applied next time. But let's talk about the winner, Indefatigable. Were you expecting a performance like this, James? I'll go to you first.
Yeah, it was a funny old race. You know, I think everyone was sort of expecting just to see whether Paisley Park was sort of back to his best. And I think it became sort of clear as the race emerged that perhaps he wasn't the Paisley Park of old, or maybe as good as he was, but he's still a good horse, no less. But you know, the winner, you know, we know this horse already, had the Cheltenham Festival winning form. You'd have to think this is a horse that's going to be some sort of player in the staying hurdling division after this. I think it's significantly weak this year in England, I have to say. I mean, Time Hill's probably likely to run in France this weekend, might run in the Long Walk and then go straight to Cheltenham. So, you know, there's going to be a load of great two races that are really up for grabs, because if Paisley Park isn't firing, then these races are going to be open. But it's interesting to hear after the race is sort of talking about Ascot, but not necessarily in December, but in June for Royal Ascot. So
yes,
it, you know, that was certainly a surprise. It's not what we expect on a Charlie horse Saturday at Wetherby. I think this is going to be a horse that is perhaps going to win a fair shoot, you know, compete at these good staying hurdles because they are so weak at the minute. But yeah, take nothing away. It was a good performance. But whether this horse is going to be as good as the Irish, I really doubt it at this point in time. But on Paisley Park, I know there's been murmurs about whether he's going to go chasing and cheap pieces and such. I think Ascot's going to be the day where we really see him. You know, I think that stiff finish just at the end of that really long sort of long walk hurdle, I think that's the race where we'll really see the Paisley Park and just whether he is the same horse as old. You know, let's not forget, you know, last December he beat Time Hill. You know, that was an excellent piece of form. The ground was really testing there. That was away from Cheltenham. I'd say that's probably one of his best runs. So, you know, let's see that in December a bit more about Paisley Park. And if they do go chasing with him, well, that will really be interesting.
It will, although it sounds like the cheek pieces and the long walk hurdle are where they're leaning towards. Chris, Paisley Park, he's been a horse who can always hit a flat spot in his races. He's done this before. Sometimes he's gone on and won from it. Other times he hasn't. Let's not forget he had that defibrillating heart as well. So it's not all been straightforward for him in recent seasons. Do you see him coming back from a run like this?
Yeah, absolutely. A horse like him, you know, he's getting on a bit, 9, so you'd think, you know, he's more likely than in previous years to need the first run back and, you know, a proper stare. So, you know, for a horse like him, 3 miles after basically dry weather round Wetherby, you know, that's a trap, isn't it? Basically, that you're never going to be shown to advantage in that kind of situation. In a way, it sort of shows the level of public belief in him that he was sent off favourite despite that, you know, but it wouldn't have tempted me to go in and him. Not that I would have necessarily picked Indefatigable as a great bet at 5-1, I must say. But I think basically it's an encouraging run back. And as James says, Ascot in December on that winter ground, that's going to suit him a lot better. And we'll see a bigger run. You know, nevertheless, there's no disguising this is not as good a first run back as he managed last season when he was second to Time Hill at Newbury. But again, slightly more favourable circumstances that day.
And what of Prashima, who finished second, travelled into it like a really, well, like one would think, the best horse in the race, but did he fully see out the trip?
Possibly not, but then, you know, it's maybe a case of learning to use himself a bit differently. I mean, he travelled like a skeleton horse, didn't he? They all seem to move through their races like classy animals, you know, which of course they usually are. I'd give him another try at a staying trip, but that might go on being an issue for sure.
Okay, tumultuous. Oh, sorry, go on, Chris.
Sorry, I was just going to say, you know, I didn't say anything about Indefatigable, but I mean, it was really quite a taking performance from her. You sort of think of her as a Cheltenham Festival winner. You know, she got the Martin Pipe, didn't she, last year, slightly fortuitously. But then, you know, she had the run on the flat on that awful ground at Pontefract. When they looked so fagged by the end of it, you nearly thought that it might actually not be a hindrance rather than a help to have a prep run like that. And then 3 weeks later, she's come out and done that. She's obviously a hardy sort.
She's very genuine, isn't she? Let's take a gallop through the Stayers Hurdle Market. Then Time Hill, who we've mentioned a couple of times, is hopefully going to go to France on the weekend. 5-1, Classical Dream, the Supreme Novices Hurdle winner from a couple of years ago, 6-1. He's been a bit of a talking horse this year. What division will he go on to feature in? Flooring Porter, last year's winner at 10s, along with Galloping Deschamps, Black Tears, and it's 16-1 bar. So as James said, very much an open division. Let's move on to the Charlie Hall Chase, also sponsored by Bet365. And this was a fascinating contest with many different threads to it. Surname, who was sent off favourite after winning the race last year, he choked, according to trainer Paul Nichols and jockey Harry Cobden. He was eventually pulled up and he was in second by the time he fell anyway, because Shan Blue had pulled the race apart on the home turn, only to come down in the home straight. It's been a tricky couple of days for the Skelton Yard, but they were just relieved to have a horse after this race because it was a real gut-wrenching fall. On social media after, James, I saw quite a few people pointing the finger at Harry Skelton and saying that he sort of misjudged this and he went for home too soon and he should have controlled the horse under him a little bit better. Do you think he had any blame in the horse's fall at all? I find that hard to believe myself.
I sort of felt it was just the horse just sort of approached it wrong. It was just one of those falls that sort of happens, I think. I mean, you know, when you're judging how to sort of jump, you can sometimes just get your stride pattern wrong. And I don't think that's necessarily a jockey error as much as a horse error. I think it was just one of those falls. I think it's very easy to sort of see the way that Shambu sort of quickened away from Surname around the bend and think, oh, he's gone for home. I'm not quite sure he even did. I just think that Shamblou has just had so much sort of class and talent in the tank that they just thought, you know what, this race is there to be won. Let's just go for it. And look, it's one of those, isn't it? You know, if it had jumped the last two, we'd be sitting here now looking at, you know, who knows what sort of price he'd be for some of those big races. He's still shortened, of course, but not as much as he would have been, I think it's fair to say. It was a seriously impressive how he did it, though. You know, just we sort of know Surname. Perhaps he's not the sort of same horse, but he travelled into the early part of a race as if he was the same Surname that was there 12 months ago. I'm intrigued by Shamblou now in terms of what they do with him, because he's fallen 3 out, which means the handicapper can't touch him, and he's rated 148, which will probably make him the best handicapped horse in the country. But I query about this horse, and you can easily shut me down this. I think this horse is at his best when he's got a bit of space around him, when he's just allowed to sort of do his own thing and go. If you think back to sort of Kempton, you know, he was sort of in a bit of a pack, then he pulled away and he sort of was allowed just to sort of go round and really do his own thing. And that was the same sort of on Saturday, where he sort of had a bit of space behind Surname, a big open track, and he was just able to sort of roll away. And that's where I wonder whether a Ladbrokes Trophy might just be his undoing. So, you know, if he can get a sort of get into the King George, which if he was mine, I'd go for, you know, we expect Froden's going to go there and make it. If he can just sort of sit behind Froden, perhaps, maybe then he might get into a bit of a rhythm. That might be his best race. But yeah, I wouldn't be sure that it's Harry's fault. The other day, I thought it was an incredible effort. And I think the last thing I'll say on him is that jump racing is amazing from just having horses that become popular overnight. You know, I don't think anyone now will not want Chamblou to win a big race after that. You know, the Fat Season for me, it just doesn't quite have it in the same way. But, you know, seeing Chamblou get up from that fall, to see him come back, it would be an amazing story. And it's one that I think everyone in the game would be keen to get behind.
I know I certainly would. I don't think I've seen a horse accelerate at such a late stage in a race like that, Chris, as Chamblou did. What did you make of it?
Yeah, I mean, it was thrilling while it was happening, and then, you know, desperately unfortunate. I thought Dan Skelton put it quite well on Racing TV yesterday. He said, you know, when you jump as many fences as these horses and jockeys do, sometimes you meet one that is just in the wrong place, unfortunately. You know, the jockey says, we're going to go short, and the horse says, well, let's try long, and, you know, unfortunately, it doesn't work out. If people in the privacy of their own minds, you know, think to themselves, well, I don't think Harry's done a great job there, that's one thing. What I do not understand is why, having seen him sort of crawling along on the landing side of the fence, so obviously dejected, they then feel minded to go on social media and give him a hard time. You know, have some humanity, for crying out loud. But anyway, you know, there'll be other days for the both of them. In a way, I'm happy for Fusel Raffles to get a big day, because, you know,
we need to mention the winner. We certainly do.
And he's been in the right place to sort of to pick up the pieces. You know, wouldn't be a vintage Charlie Hall, but anyway, you know, he's got his day in the sun, and fair play. And good old Kitty's Light, who's so always, you know, game and running a great race in some of the tough races he's been handed over the last year. And he hasn't been able to win many of them, but he always shows up well. And I dare say it'll be a similar story in the Ladbrokes Trophy next time as well. And good old Mighty Thunder. Sorry, I was just going to give a mention to Mighty Thunder running down the field at a huge price. You know, this is just a run for him, really, but he sort of moved well enough and jumped well enough that you think there's, when he gets a test of stamina, he'll be a serious player in whatever his target turns out to be this season.
Yeah, last year's Midlands Grand National winner, Lucinda Russell, of course, she had Ahoy Sonore running in the Colin Parker at Carlisle. That didn't go to plan, but hopefully we'll see that horse back in the winner's enclosure soon. Where would you go with Chamblou, Chris?
Yeah, I think James's thoughts are basically mine, that you'd think the Ladbrokes Trophy would be, you know, too much of a test of stamina for a horse that races like him. But, you know, the way he's shot clear of that field, and he's only on 148, and the handicapper can't touch him because he didn't make it to the second last, you know, he's seriously well handicapped. And with that knowledge, I think it'd be very difficult for them to not have a go at the Ladbrokes Trophy and hope that there's not too much rain in the days before and try and settle him until, you know, about the second last, and pull him out and press the button and hope there's something left. And, you know, that level of intrigue is going to add so much to that race, because it's what everyone's going to be talking about. You know, can Chamblou make it home? You know, can he make it last all the way? Because if they can somehow stretch him out for 3¼ miles, he might have £10 in hand of everything else in the race, you know?
Yeah, I'd love to see it. I think we should see more of the best horses in handicaps, and he would be the best horse in that race on ratings, wouldn't he?
Yeah, no question about it. You can write that one down in pen for sure. But of course, okay. it doesn't always work.
No, it certainly doesn't. And I think James's queries are legitimate as well, given the way that he's raced in the past. What would you do, if anything, to revive Surname now, Chris?
Well, listen, I mean, if Paul Nicholls can't do it, then I'm happy to accept that it can't be done. This has obviously been a lasting problem for him. And, you know, through 2019, they got it sorted and all was well, and they had some very big days with him. But it does rather look as though the big days are not coming back. So I'm sure they'll look after him.
So you'd be leaning more towards retirement than giving something else a go?
Well, there are other races that won't be that kind of test, like the Peterborough Chase. You know, you could imagine that would be a suitable target if the weather's right. You know, flat track, grade two sort of level of opposition that can be quite winnable in terms of the opposition, can't it? So, yeah, I mean, if they wanted to have a go at that, why not indeed? But I think, you know, from a punting perspective, it would be hard to have much faith in him at the sort of odds that Surname is always going to be.
Yes. And talking of Surname, let's talk about some of his stable mates. We'll get onto Frodon in just a minute, but Clander's Over, he's at the top of the King George market currently at 7-2. Frodon, biggest price, 7-1. Alaho from Willie Mullins' stable in Ireland, 9-1. Chantry House as well. Manella Indo, who we'll talk about in just a second, at 10s, as well as Shamblu and Envoi Alene, who made a winning reappearance at Down Royal. And that's where we're going to go next, so stick with us.
The Racing Post is supporting Safer Gambling Week. To find out more about Safer Gambling Week, search the hashtag SGWeek21 or visit safergamblinguk.org.
It was a pretty magical day at Down Royal on Saturday, including in the Ladbrokes Champion Chase, the Grade 1, which was won by Frodon for Bryony Frost, who's of course hit the headlines recently, and Paul Nicholls. This was his 18th win. Missed a few fences on the way round, perhaps uncharacteristically for him, but he battled strongly to beat Galvin with Manella Indo and Delta Work in behind. I feel like this horse brings a lot of emotion to the racing game, James. Why do you think that is at this point? Because he and Brian have clearly got something special that you don't see very often. Can you put your finger on it?
Yeah, I think one of the things that we see so often in this game, and perhaps particularly in the last sort of few years, is that we've had great superstars of the sport, the sort of Fahines, the Duvans, the Altiors, who have just won their races by big margins and done it sort of effortlessly. Excuse me, my pronunciation's not too good there. But Frodon, at times, you're sort of watching the race and you're sort of so used to seeing a horse on the bridle and then being pushed along. You know, and when the last off a bridle, they usually win. That's how the old saying goes. But Frodon, you know, every time you saw the doubt, okay, right, is his horse, he's been jumping well, he's been going well, now he looks tired, now he looks beaten. For a horse then to sort of be headed and then get back up, it's exhilarating to watch it because you're almost sort of surprised about it. And I think that you can never sort of underestimate, how impressive it is. But also, secondly, you sort of forget that the horse does it after a while. You know, we've seen this horse do it quite a few times, just sort of think, okay, now he's beaten, and he's come back and done it. I think when a horse really sort of surprises you time and time again, that's when they become special, because everyone sort of doubts them. They're sort of in the race, you're sort of going, right, they're beaten, there's better horses in here, there's new opposition. But time after the time, these horses come back and they run big races, they win big races. And that's the great thing about Frodon. You know, we've seen him in the Ryanair. It feels like ages ago, you know, look at Paisley Park. On the other hand, you know, he's a horse that perhaps is nearing the end of his career, whereas Frodon is perhaps having the best day of his career, even better than the Ryanair. You know, that's certainly sort of what Paul Nicholls says in today's paper. An amazing horse. And I think credit to everyone involved with him, because we know what happened at Cheltenham this year. It's bold to go over to Ireland and to try and take them on and to take on a Gold Cup winner. In Manella Indo, and to go over there and to beat them is seriously impressive. You know, they've clearly had this race in mind. It's clearly been a plan that Paul Nicholls so loves to sort of think about and come together. But also to go and do it in the way he did, it was fantastic to watch. And I don't think anyone who loves this sport wouldn't have enjoyed watching that. You know, looking at the race, you'd be disappointed if you backed Galvin. You know, he looked like he was travelling strongly. He had race fitness on his side, you know, the money came for him, so there's a lot in his favour. I just query of him whether he's quite sort of good enough to win a Gold Cup, and I just wonder whether, as such a strong traveller, we know he stays being the winner of a National Hunt Chase, whether the National is going to be the long-term target for him. He's obviously rated pretty highly, so it's going to be some ask for him to do it. But yeah, and Manella Indo, a good run, but again, I don't think he was sort of ready for it. You know, I think the two at the top of the betting were miles fitter and stronger. And that was their day almost, where Manuel Arindo is going to be a late developer. Look, it's hard to say if he's going to win a Gold Cup again yet. You know, it's going to take his next run, but it was encouraging. But he does have to improve if he's going to defend his title come March.
He does, but he did so last year. He won his first couple of starts, didn't he? But they weren't as competitive as this. Chris, for me, as well as this being a sort of fairy tale about Frodon and Bryony, I thought this was another huge feather in the cap of Paul Nicholls. Galvin, as James alluded to, a winner over 3 miles, 6 furlongs in the National Hunt Chase, and race fit after winning a Grade 3 last time. And Frodon was probably even fitter than him, or at least his bravery made it look that way. Paul Nicholls saying that the Irish Gold Cup at Leopardstown could be next. That's going to be fascinating, isn't it? Seeing him at the Dublin Racing Festival. What do you think of, how does this rank among Paul Nicholls' achievements as a trainer?
Oh, blimey. Well, there's a long list of those. But I mean, it just shows that, you know, when he picks a target for a horse and sets his mind on having said horse in peak condition for the race, you know, there's no one better at doing that. And it's interesting that after the shellacking that we took at the festival in March, you know, it's nearly made him more interested in going over there and trying to compete in their races. You know, Clan at Punchestown in April, now Frodon, and now he's talking about going over for the Irish Gold Cup when everybody else in Britain is thinking, my goodness, it's going to be 10 years before I go back to Ireland. Yeah, it's inspiring, and it's worked. And I mean, the thing that you know, caught my ear was when he said last week that you know, Down Royal was going to be a track that was really going to suit Frodon's style of racing, and of course it turns out he was absolutely right about that. It was just fun watching him ping around there, you know. I think it was the right day and the ideal conditions for a horse like him, and he's gone and beaten a Gold Cup winner. So fair play. You know, if those two horses turned up at Cheltenham in March, you'd be thinking, you know, Manila Indo would win that head to head for a certainty. But then, you know, we always say stuff like that, and there's a danger that we take Frodon too lightly, you know, because we've sort of got it established in our minds that he's not quite at the highest class, but he'd gone and won another Grade One and had a big payday, and he wasn't favourite again when he won. He's won 18 races. Winning races for 5 years, and maybe we still need to take him slightly more seriously.
And Galvin, Gold Cup or Grand National, where would you be looking towards?
Well, I mean, if he's supposed to be a Grand National horse, that's not an ideal start to your season, is it? Finishing up close behind the horse that's rated £8 higher, you know, with the Gold Cup winner 4 lengths back behind you, he's got to go up for that. And it's hard to imagine he's going to have so much as an ounce in hand by the time we get to April. The quality he's shown there, I'd say you're more or less obliged now to campaign him like a good horse and go the Grade One routes. But you know, we'll see.
Maybe he'll be in the race so that Tiger Roll gets a nice weight to go off of.
Well, I mean, it's a fair point that if you, it's all right getting a horse onto a sort of decent rating for the National, but you do want one of the top weights to stay in the race, don't you? So, I mean, maybe that is at the back of their minds. I don't know.
Okay, let's move on to Ascot. And first up, Soaring Glory, who was a really smart winner of the listed handicap hurdle. That was for Tom Scudamore with John Joe O'Neill, the trainer, 5-1 shot. This horse ran in the Supreme last year, came unstuck behind Appreciate It, but won the Betfair hurdle before that. He's clearly progressed again since last year. This was a high on Racing Post ratings, 154 for this effort. What would you do with him now, James? Greatwood hurdle is on his radar, at least. He has an entry in the race.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be very interesting to see what they do with him. And he's a horse that, I suppose, you know, we sort of remember horses for getting beaten at Cheltenham, but you know, winning a Betfair hurdle is a really, really tough ask. And if you sort of go through the form of a race, it's already working out really, really strongly with the likes of Buzz and Annual Invictus, which won at Cheltenham the other week. So, you know, it's the Betfair hurdle is always going to be a very good race. It's the richest handicap hurdle in Britain. So, you know, that's sort of an obvious point. So it's always going to be a good race, and he won it really pretty easily on the day. You know, I would be keen just to try and win some more money in the sort of handicap hurdles with him. You know, we've, he's won a listed race there and done it in the style of a horse that perhaps is knocking on sort of grade two level, perhaps sort of into grade one level. And that's the sort of horse you need to win these really valuable handicaps now. So yeah, that's the route I would take him in. But, you know, looking through the entries the other day, it's going to be that funnel game of who the Irish going to have in the race.
It is, and he looked pretty tired after this, as you'd expect as well, blowing quite heavily in the aftermath. So we'll wait to see what happens with Soaring Glory. Let's move on to Amula Gold, who won the Burn Group Handicap Chase under Bridget Andrews, and it was another last gasp victory for this jockey. She did it aboard Robin's Gold at the track over hurdles last year, didn't she, Bridget? And timed this one to perfection off a £14 higher mark than when winning the race last year, Chris. How does Amula Gold rate among the 2 milers around at the moment?
I think he's a bit of a known quantity, isn't he? But, you know, when things fall right, he's good enough to pick up the pieces, isn't he? I mean, you even at the second last, I don't think you'd have picked him as the likely winner. In fact, I'm just sort of watching it again now, and I don't think he's going to get there. You know, Monsieur Lecoq got away from him, surely. Oh, no, he has got there. Look, I mean, there were a few finishes like this at Ascot on Saturday, weren't there? There'll be people that back Monsieur Lecoq that just got headed in this race. And shall we have one again a couple of races later that got caught by Can Do Kid on the line? It's a stiff track, and you go for home a long way out at your peril. But Amula Gold's you know, exactly the sort of horse you want in that kind of race.
Yeah, and what about Larry in the London Gold Cup? That was a Grade 3, his first win since 2019. Clearly well handicapped, was unlucky on his last start and got back to form for Jamie and Gary Moore, who often do so well at this meeting. Where would you go with him now?
Oh, goodness me. I nearly think that'd be job done, £57,000 first prize there. You know, he doesn't have to do anything else for the rest of the season. I dare say they'll find races. Isn't there a good 3 mile handicap chase at Ascot just before Christmas, isn't there? They might be thinking about that. But this is probably his moment, isn't it? Because, you know, that yard could not be hotter. It's, I think they had a 4-timer on Sunday, 3 at Ascot on Saturday. They're on fire, and, you know, anything that Gary Moore sends to Sandown on Sunday, that's what I'm going to be interested in, because I think, you know, that meeting at this time of year, they nearly always do well.
Yeah, and let's not forget Porticello, who won the Wensleydale Juvenile Hurdle at Wetherby on Friday, the listed race. He's currently the Triumph Hurdle favourite. James, what did you make of Gary Moore's magical couple of days in the action at Ascot?
Yeah, it was an incredible day. And it's one of those, you know, I think sometimes we forget just how sometimes confidence in a yard just really brings out the best in some of the horses. And it's sort of almost quite special how it can happen. And I mean, I was looking through what's coming up this week. I know it says Fontwell and Plumpton on this week, so you wouldn't want to take Gary Moore on either of those tracks where he particularly does well. But yeah, on Larry, I found that quite an interesting race, and I agree with Chris, he'll probably go back there. I was pretty taken by the second, actually, Check It Out, who's a horse I've sort of been keeping an eye on since he won a race at Ludlow. I think this horse wants better ground, actually, and I was quite surprised he ran so well. I mean, his price was pretty big. I think he was about 11 to 1. I think he's going to be a horse that's going to be worth following, particularly when they got on better ground. And given his rate at 132, he might be he might just be one who's well handicapped as well. We know Nigel Twiston Davis likes to target him at Cheltenham, and I wouldn't be surprised if he might turn up at something maybe New Year's Day or at the end of the month on Trials Day for a race like that. He's going to be one I'll be keeping a close eye on for the rest of the season.
Had a couple of not so good seasons, hasn't he, Nigel Twiston Davis, but clearly thinks a lot of Check It Out. Chris, I'm going to throw back to you. Any more eye catchers from the week? Anything that entered your notebook?
Well, actually, that very race, Glenforth, I thought was very interesting. I mean, you know, as we've just been saying, it was a day when a few horses went for home, an ambitious distance from home, and he did a crisp. You know, he's just he's taken
over. He's that way inclined, isn't he?
Yeah, he absolutely is. But I mean, I think so. The interesting thing about him is he was up to 154 at one stage. Now he's down to 137, and I guess there's no raising him after that, because in the end he's been beaten 10 lengths. But he's shown he's got the ability, and he's, you know, freshened up by a change of stable maybe, to go and win something you know, quite readily, as long as he's not, you know, first time back running away with himself at one of the stiffest tracks in the country on rain softened ground. You know, there'll be another day, you know, more favorable circumstances for him off that rating. You know, I should think he's got a 5-length win in him somewhere.
Yeah, he's always been a talented horse, hasn't he? But sometimes he can be a bit in and out. James, any more that you want to mention before we move on?
Yeah, I was impressed by a horse that won yesterday at Carlisle. I thought Carlisle was a really good card. I really like that card, actually. I like the Colin Parker. It's good to see Fiddler on the Roof. Win yesterday. Holdback Thought that won the 3-mile-2 handicap chase, which can be quite an informative race looking ahead. This was Venetia horse, who's sort of a big course this, and he sort of improved for a sort of summer on his back, and it was no surprise he was well backed, and he won in the style of a staying handicap chaser that's going to be progressive as the season goes on. You know, I know it's a sort of bit of a cliche, but a typical Venetia horse, you know, bit of cut in the ground, and some of those races at Haydock, you know, 3-mile-4, those sort of races are going to be fine for him. I think he'll go up to about 135 for his win, so maybe just creep into a Welsh National if they wanted to go that route. But heavy ground, stiff sort of track, and a proper staying handicapper who's only going to improve as the season goes on.
Yeah, second to Ask Me Early in a good race at Chepstow last year. Been following those two horses for a while now, and I think you're spot on. Welsh Grand National, those sort of testing ground marathon events are going to suit that pair. Now let's talk about maybe some flat action. The Melbourne Cup is tomorrow. The Breeders' Cup kicks off on Friday. We've also got the Badger Beers on Saturday at Wincanton. And James, as our West Country correspondent, is going to give us a steer on the Holden Gold Cup card at Exeter. So stay with us.
The Racing Post are proud to be supporting Safer Gambling Week, the 1st till the 7th of November. For more information, visit safergamblinguk.org.
Welcome back. Now, coming up this week, we've got plenty, as I mentioned just before that break. James, what are you most looking forward to? It's got to be Exeter for you, hasn't it?
Yes, it's a big week, and I'm very jealous that Chris gets the opportunity to head down to Exeter tomorrow as I'm on stable tour duty. But it looks a smashing race, doesn't it? You know, we've always used to sort of seeing this race sort of pretty good, and Paul Nicholls particularly having a strong hand in it. Grenadine won it last year. He's back in there this year. A lot's changed for Grenadine since he won it last year. He's a Grade One winner now, and he carries a top weight. Hitman is in there. He's a horse I've always really liked, sort of since he won up there at Foss last. You know, he's going to carry 10 stone 7, I think, and that's the sort of race you want. He's also had wind surgery, so he's going to be interesting. Him and Eldorado Allen were both very good novices last season, who sort of promised a bit that they might be better over 2.5 miles, but they both sort of went up to Aintree, and I don't know. I got the feeling neither of them particularly, Eldorado Allen definitely didn't run his race, and I felt Hitman had a bit more left in the tank. So I think we're talking about two really sort of improving prospects and two horses that might just develop into perhaps Grade One animals if things go right. And Grenadine, who's already Grade One winner. But the interesting thing about these two horses is, given what Shishkin did last year, I think they're going to be hopeful that they do stay 2.5 miles.
Yeah, indeed. Grenadine, of course, won the race last year. Now he's racing off 168. Moonlighter, King D'Argent, Zanza, they're also in there. Good horses in their own right. And Chris, you're off to the track. I always think whenever you see Exeter on telly, it looks absolutely freezing. Can you testify that's correct?
Listen, Maddie, there's no bad weather. There's only bad clothing. You've just got to be prepared for all eventualities. The thing I always think about Exeter is, you know, I usually take so long to actually type the blooming words. Tracks like that, I'm the last in the press room invariably, and quite often get locked in and have to find my car in the pitch black. So that's what I'm looking forward to tomorrow.
Yes, I'm sure you are. Are you also looking forward to the Breeders' Cup? Obviously, Tanawa, she's going for back-to-back wins in the Breeders' Cup turf. Any fancies for that meeting?
Well, you know, I was hoping for a bit of rain for the sake of Sisfahan. You know, he's such a sort of charismatic horse, you know, in his looks and the way he races. And of course, we're all switched on now to the quality of German racing. It looks like it's going to be a dry week at Del Mar, so I think possibly they're just going to get away from him in the Breeders' Cup turf. But I mean, he's got that back form that looks so special now, because he was only beaten a length by Torquato Tasso at Baden-Baden beginning of September. I don't think he got the absolute ideal run through either that day or the next time. He's one for people to remember anyway. Sisvahan, I'm sure, will be back next year and winning good races. But probably the way things are working out, I think not for him. Tiona's an interesting one. I mean, I couldn't be sure which race she's going to turn up in, but, you know, I think she's going to get her ground. 8-1 in the turf just now. I mean, if she lines up in that and is still 8-1, she'd be very backable, I think.
Yes. So first off, we talked about the Betway Holden Gold Cup. That's at 1:55 tomorrow. And then latterly talking about the Longines Breeders' Cup turf at Delmar, which is at 11:40 on Saturday. Tanawa, the 13-8 favourite for that. Chris has mentioned Tiona at 7-1. Interesting to see how she travels, given that she can be a little bit quirky. Sisvahan for Henk Gruer at 16-1. Chance, James, what do you think of the big meetings around the world this week?
Yeah, I remember not long ago we were sort of discussing Space Blues. I'm particularly excited to see him, actually, in the mile. It's a bit of a boring choice. I know he's sort of favourite. He's sort of a horse. I think at 11-4, there's a little bit of value to be had there. I mean, you've got to remember, this is a horse that was seriously impressive on Arc Day. A horse who looks like a sort of a mile around Del Mar is going to be perfect for him. And, you know, as the week goes on, I wouldn't be surprised if he does get a little bit shorter. So he's the one I'm particularly looking forward to. But yeah, an amazing international week of racing. But for me, it's all about the Badger Beers and the Rising Stars. Rising Stars, particularly with Brave Man's Game, which is going to be really interesting to see how he gets on.
Yeah, he is. And Paul Nicholls has long had this sort of route mapped out for him. Good horses have won that race in the past, and it should almost be a formality, shouldn't it, for him? What about the Badger Beers? Have you got your eye on one in that? We've just got the entries come through now, I see.
Yeah, I've been having a look, and a few of them are sort of, I was expecting to sort of turn up, having done a few stable tours in the last couple of weeks. I mean, Potterman was always a horse that sort of last year you thought might end up here, given how he ran last season. He's going to be obviously one of extreme interest. El Presente won it last year. He's interesting. Difficult at this stage. I wouldn't want to put my sort of finger on at this stage. You know, be interested to see who actually turns up. But yeah, if I had to, probably Potterman, because he's always struck me as a horse who's going to sort of win a big one at one point. And Rocco as well, actually, for Nigel Twiston Davis. He's interesting in there because he's run a few good races. And, you know, we said earlier in the show that they weren't quite firing last season. Perhaps he's one that might take a step forward, but whether he's good enough to win a race like that, I'm not quite sure. But they're the two I'd be looking at.
Okay, the races and times for you will go back to Space Blues and the Breeders' Cup Mile. That's at 10:20 on Saturday, and the Badger Beers at 3:00 at Wincanton on the same day. Now, we've got the Melbourne Cup to look forward to tomorrow morning. That's going to be all eyes on Incentivise. But where are you looking for your best bets this week?
This will not be beaten.
Chris, I will go to you first, given you were successful with the 12-1 winner this time last week. Who are you fancying?
Well, it's just fun to have the Grand National fences back, isn't it? So I'm obviously, I've been given the Grand Seft and a good look. 22 horses left in it. Handicap chase, you know, that's pretty straightforward, isn't it? Ought to be low-hanging fruit, a race like that. So, you know, having gone over and over, I think Mr. Whittaker, I think 20-1 is still available. Mr. Whittaker, who's with Donald McCain these days, he was with Mick Shannon when he won at the Cheltenham Festival, I think, is it 2 or maybe even 3 years ago now. He looked a classy horse at that stage, you know, one or two things not quite gone right for him. He went pretty high in the handicap, but he's come down a bit now. Had his first run for the new yard over hurdles at Carlisle the other day. Looked like he was going to win easy, but then he's got outspeeded by something from the Skelton yard, a horse called K Fernando. Wouldn't be surprising if in the fullness of time that looked like quite a good run in the circumstances. I would think on his revised mark, he's got to have a few pounds in hand. I'm expecting him to run pretty well. And if 20-1 is indeed still available, I'm just sort of clicking on the race now, I'd say that's a pretty good each way option.
Yeah, I think you can get 25-1 even.
Oh, get in.
There you go. You're liking these horses that have come from Mick Channon's yard, aren't you? That's a bit of an angle now with Glenn Forster and
oh dear, yes, there is a theme there, but that wasn't intentional at all. I don't mean to give Mick any kind of a kicking.
Not at all.
He does well with these horses, but I mean, you know what it's like, you know, with these old horses, a change of scenery freshens them up sometimes.
Okay, and James, what about you?
The race at Newbury is worth watching. It's at 1:30, the beginner's chase, because no less than top of the game, champ Le Bagawar, Lost in Translation and Dashiell Dresher have all run in it in the last 3 years, I think, albeit it wasn't particularly good last season. So that's definitely a race to keep an eye out for on Thursday. The bet I'm going to have, though, is in the Potemps Trolley, Fergal O'Brien's Jarvie's Plate, who was running okay last time before he fell, but I think this is a horse who particularly thrives around Newbury. He's a course and distance winner. He's dropped back to a mark 136, which is the same mark he won there over course and distance. This Potemps trial is not particularly the warmest, being on a sort of Thursday afternoon. It doesn't look particularly good at the entries. I think this is a horse who might be back to his best. And I think he might be one interesting to follow. But it's interesting that Paddy Brennan's already dropped up on Polish. It might be that they claim off Jarvie's Plate, and he could outrun his odds. I'm sure he'll be higher, given he's going to probably be the second choice for the stable.
Okay, that's the 2:30 at Newbury on Thursday. Thank you all for listening. Hope you enjoyed the show. Make sure you rate, review and subscribe wherever you are listening to us from. We'll be back on Friday with a detailed look at the weekend's racing. So between now and then, best of luck with your bets, and we'll see you soon. Bye-bye.